The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show. We are always glad to have you come on by. Today, we're going to have another great show. We're going to be talking about what's going on with hiring, one of our favorite topics that I usually like to cover to make sure that people know what's going on in terms of careers, hiring, trends, and then always talking to the different professionals who are out there who can give us some insight on how to make sure that you can either get a job in the federal government, in a government contractor, or even the private sector if you're making that transition, to make sure you get employed and make sure that you are successful in what you're doing. We've got on our line Mike Bruni. He's a talent acquisition professional working for one of the defense contractors out there. He's been in this game for a long time, so he's an expert in terms of, you know, looking at recruitment, looking at how to hire people, and also giving advice to people about how to make sure you present yourself the right way to recruiters and companies in order to get through the door. Mike, thanks for coming on Fed Access.
Hey, Derek, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Mike, you know, I mean, you've been in this dynamic of kind of government contracting and also been in the world of talent acquisition or recruitment of people, of the right talent for companies for a long time. As we are looking at this right now in 2014, what are we looking at? I'm seeing some trends that are starting to evolve in some of the government contractors. What are you seeing?
Absolutely. You know, we're still, of course, in a challenging marketplace. We've just come across 1 October for a brand new fiscal year. We are, you know, in the midst of a continuing resolution. So this coming government fiscal year, I'd have to say what we're projecting should be pretty flat. I don't see any huge growth or anything that's going to really take us by surprise. The fear we have right now from an industry is in 2016, the return of the sequester. So for at least the next 2 years, it's still... Obviously, we're still facing a very challenging market here within particularly the government contract industry.
You know, with that market dynamic, and we say that almost sounds like a horror film, Return of the Sequester. it's kind of like this dynamic. But, you know, I think to some people that is kind of a horror film. Are people concerned as we look at the politics? I mean, kind of a broken Congress. We're going to have elections and other things like that. A new president coming in. Is that really kind of giving some instability to the market of government contracting, and people don't want to make a lot of hiring decisions or hiring growth patterns based on that?
No question. And I'll say, in all my years of staffing, even when I think our lawmakers actually got along and negotiated more, and obviously we're seeing a very very challenging Congress here and not a lot getting through. So I think there's going to be an extra emphasis on that. And yes, I think the public is aware that inaction in Washington, D.C., as it relates to the federal government contracting industry, is certainly going to have a substantial impact on the traditional local market here. So, yes, I think from, you know, anecdotally, from the folks that I talk to and the outreach that I do, I do get that reaction from a number of folks who are currently employed as well as folks who are in career transition.
You know, with these companies and people looking at the defense market, because it sounds as if, you know, and we're starting to see certain things with the conflicts of, you know, Syria, this ISIS battle and other dynamics. Is that going to cause any increases, or that's not going to really have a lot of impact on especially government contractor and other hiring? Are you seeing anything, because, you know, a lot of times we have conflict, and conflict will sometimes shift some hiring numbers into a positive swing sometimes. Are we seeing anything kind of come out of that?
You know, nothing I think that would really, what they consider, move the needle.
Okay.
Not at this point.
Okay.
I haven't seen any evidence that because of the international conflicts that automatically, funding would trickle down, particularly into the private sector,
right,
that would make a huge impact, say, on our unemployment or, a huge impact on this industry that would give, you know, corporate leaders and industry leaders the ability to project any type of substantial growth. We have not seen any evidence of that, and I have to tell you, just personally, I don't foresee that at least this coming fiscal year.
Okay.
I mean, minus any type of, hopefully this won't be the case, but minus any type of major catastrophe.
Right. I've seen a number of companies starting, and I know even your profession, I've seen a number of companies who are starting to not only just stay with defense, but I'm also starting to see healthcare. What's going on with that? I mean, I'm seeing this evolution into people becoming more healthcare oriented. What's happening with that?
Absolutely. And in response to this, now this is, you know, since the sequester, that nasty word, really came into our vocabulary a little over 2 years ago. Most of the defense industrial firms have really started to take a look at their own portfolios and the ability to survive in this market with a shrinking defense and government contracting industry is really to diversify your own internal portfolios. Healthcare being one of the markets that really does present some significant growth over the next couple of years, particularly with the automation of healthcare records, the research and development aspect of the healthcare field, and the life sciences and whatnot. Industries are targeting that particular marketplace, putting more emphasis on those types of capabilities and actually being able to develop a pretty robust portfolio internally. Also, you're looking at a lot of our companies who have traditionally supported the federal government contracting space looking beyond our borders. So the international market is certainly a hotbed of growth and projected growth for the next, say, 3 to 5 years for some of the government contractors, systems integrators, who previously did not really look externally beyond our borders. So between those two markets there, I think that's where a lot of companies are banking on, looking at the growth and obviously their balance sheets for the next couple of years. I think that there are two areas that will be very hot that a lot of companies will be pursuing.
Let me break those down, Mike, because I think that's really interesting for people to hear. When we look at kind of health, and I'll even kind of hit on healthcare first, what are we looking at? Are we looking kind of like you talk about system integration? Are we looking at kind of the dynamic of healthcare technology? Are we talking about, healthcare information systems that are coming online, making healthcare more accessible? I mean, what are we looking at in terms of kind of the hiring and what kind of people are being hired with that?
Absolutely. Yes, all of the above, Derek, of what you had just mentioned, certainly the integration of healthcare IT systems, again, the automation of those systems, along with that brings, you know, the operations and maintenance piece, the development of new systems, also the security of those particular systems. As we know, bringing a lot of the healthcare records online opens up a whole new set of doors of security and risk.
Right.
So obviously this would have a huge impact on, say, the cybersecurity business. So again, all of those factors combined, you know, if you look ahead in the market, it appears that, you know, these types of capabilities could technically possibly generate, you know, the next uptick in our market.
Are we looking at a market where, especially with healthcare, is it going to be less about a person who's cleared and more about a person who has capabilities? I mean, are we getting out of a dynamic where the security clearance is the main thing, especially government market has been very big on, did you have a top secret clearance? Did you have top secret SEI, top secret with the poly? I mean, are we coming into a market that now is going to be a little bit more open and accessible maybe for other people who don't have clearances?
Sure. From what we can see, the majority of the work and the work that is being forecasted across healthcare, I don't think that you're going to see the security clearance be as a required credential as it has been, say, over the last 10 to 12 years.
Okay.
And also another note on that, you know, with the government contract, the traditional government contracting and defense contracting market, as it continues to consolidate and draw down, you're going to obviously see a less of an emphasis on security clearances. I think the government, through continuous evaluation, will be obviously limiting the amount of security clearances that are actually issued, and probably as we see the continued drawdown of the industry, you'll start to see, you know, some of those security clearances, expire and things of that nature, where it boils down to more of a manageable market, if you will.
Okay. With all of that, you know, if you had to kind of talk to people about, hey, listen, This is what we can kind of see, because it sounds like, I mean, healthcare is going to be an evolving dynamic that I think is going to continue to grow. I mean, I think everybody sees healthcare as kind of a new wave of improvement, like you mentioned about healthcare information systems and more records being online, and even maybe doctors just being able to utilize technology in a way in which maybe they can help people, even if you don't come into the office, but I can maybe get online and talk to you and diagnose certain things and maybe give you a prescription and say, hey, listen, go do this without you even have to walk into the office. With that happening, what advice would you give to a job seeker right now in terms of this market? Is this going to be maybe kind of the next 10-year boom?
Although I can't project 10 years into the future. However, I would like to take you up on, what would I recommend for someone in career transition or someone who is looking inside the healthcare field. And I would say this probably to anyone, particularly in IT and in more of the software-related industries. The key is to stay on top of your skills. Mm. Make sure that whichever IT field you are in, you are on the cutting edge. Today, if you tend to get to lose focus, your skills can become extinct in a very quick period of time. So, yes, stay on top of the market, stay on top of the trends, of the technology, and really, what I always say, follow the money.
Mm. That's a good point, Mike. When I come back, I want to talk about this international market dynamic. We've got to take a quick break, but I want to go into what you were saying about the international market. I think that's very, very interesting in terms of international development and companies that had always stayed, internally U.S. focused, now really kind of taking a look at the world and kind of say, hey, listen, we need to start broadening out. Does that mean working with governments? Does that mean just kind of developing an international business market in terms of maybe U.S. aid? Where is that going as it relates to that? I want to talk about that when we come back. We're talking to Mike Bruni. He is a talent acquisition professional, has been in this field for many, many years, does recruiting for one of the major defense contractors, but he's known about what's going on with recruiting for many, many years from all his different experiences, and he's giving some advice and some insight on what's happening with this market and the transition that's happening with this market right now and where it's going to go so that you can prepare your career and have that right kind of career intelligence to be successful. We'll be right back after this break. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we are talking about what's going on in the market, the job market, what's going on with hiring, what's going on with some of the trends in terms of hiring and recruitment and other areas. What do you need to know? Defense market has always been something that we've always known about that's been steady, but there have been some changes right now. There are some new markets that are coming online. There, some people need to now diversify what they're doing a little bit and not focus maybe just on defense right now, but maybe focusing on international healthcare and other areas. We're talking about all these things right now. We have on the line with us Mike Bruni. He's a talent acquisition professional, a senior recruiter, so to say, a person who knows about recruiting people for the right position, the right person for the right positions. He's been doing this for a long time, and he's giving us some insight today on what's going on with the market and some trends. Mike, you mentioned about kind of a shifting of some companies to the international market. What does that exactly mean?
Well, as we project into the future, and again, sort of getting away from the trends of the last 10 to 12 years here in the defense industry, because obviously, the U.S. government has been the engine, really, for our industry with the build-up post 9/11. Of course, beginning roughly a couple of years back, that wasn't the case anymore as we saw some of the overseas wars draw down, as we continue to see that mission draw down. Certainly companies who have built up their portfolios and built up their business over the last couple of years are looking at a very challenging market. So over the course of the last couple of years, we as an industry have really started to diversify and look outward, look beyond our borders for the next potential marketplace, because a lot of our capabilities as an industry really are in demand overseas. It makes perfect sense to really start looking with friendly governments, incorporating in other countries where we weren't incorporated before, to really offer our capabilities, our services, and our solutions, as it makes sense.
Hmm.
So it is certainly the international market is one I think that our industry is a little behind, maybe even some other companies. Certainly we do have players in our industry who have been embedded for quite some time internationally. But we're starting to see some of the companies that traditionally were not and historically not players in the international market starting to actually, you know, develop potential customers and potential leads overseas.
You know, with that, are we talking about dealing with international governments? Are we talking about dealing with maybe international companies who are growing? Or are we talking about a dynamic of international development, working with USAID and other maybe international development organizations to provide a lot of places need infrastructure, they need technology, you need a number of different resources. Is that where we're going?
Absolutely. And I think it will be a continuation, of course, supporting the U.S. government's mission overseas in a number of different areas, whether that be USAID, state, or any of the other agencies that do have work overseas. It'll certainly be that. It will certainly be, you know, the beginning of relationships with new friendly governments overseas. Again, whether that be cybersecurity, whether that be some type of systems integration, something that we haven't done before as an industry. And then also working in new areas,
right,
all around. So I think it's a combination of everything that you mentioned. But again, it's really new ground for a number of systems integrators here that traditionally have been here, U.S. based.
What are we looking at, Mike, in terms of salaries? Are we also looking for people who say, listen, you know, I can leave and go live in a country for a couple of years? Are we looking for, you know, the dynamic how we used to have in defense market where you maybe go for 6 months or 15 months? When we look at the international market and maybe a U.S. person going to that international market, are we going to see a heavy hiring to go and, you know, work and live in the place? Or are we going to be seeing more hiring of people on the ground in these countries? Where do we see it happening?
That's a great question, Derek, and I think you're going to see a combination of both. I think as we continue as an industry to incorporate in foreign countries, that does give us the ability to hire nationals from those companies, from those countries. It also gives us the ability, obviously pending international laws and obviously corporate agreements, to move expats also overseas, as expats overseas. So I think you will see the combination thereof, the ability for us as an industry and companies based here, incorporating other countries will give us the ability to hire local nationals there in those particular specific countries.
Sure,
but
sure,
yes,
sure.
I do see with the growth of international markets within our industry, I think the ability for a U.S. worker to work overseas, whether that be on a TDY basis or whether that be a PCS basis, I think you'll start to see an uptick in that type of employment.
With all of that, is that going to be, of course, we've got the skill set in terms of technology and other areas, but that sounds as if and we're going to also be needing people who have certain language skills or certain cultural skills or certain other kind of skills that go beyond the technical. Would that be something that's going to be sought after now even more?
Correct. Absolutely. I think especially in the growth areas around the world, where you see a lot of the international economies growing, you see the Brazilian market, you see countries within Africa, even in Europe, the Middle East. Absolutely. Along with the growth overseas, all of these supporting types of functions obviously will feel the effects. So yes, language, any type of marketing and sales and business development, things of those nature, those types of skill sets I can see being in higher demand as we continue this uptick and continuing the building of the business overseas.
You know, what are we looking at? Is this going to be a 2014 dynamic, or this is going to be kind of swinging into maybe 2015, 2016, as we, especially as companies, we mentioned sequestration, especially as we maybe see this looming, maybe companies want to say, hey, listen, let's go ahead and start expanding so we don't have to worry about sequestration as much. We've already expanded our business into these other areas, and we're not so reliant upon government money as much. Is that the game plan?
I think it is more of a longer-term projection. The ability to establish yourself overseas, the ability to brand your organization, to brand yourself in foreign markets with the competition that is there, I think it's a long-term type of projection. It's a long-term plan. But ultimately, the sales cycle is probably going to be a little longer than, say, the traditional a government contract or even the commercial market here in the continental United States.
Right.
It's certainly, you're going to be looking at least a 3 to 5 year projection here before you'll start to see the benefits of obviously these new markets and the impact it will have on balance sheets and revenue and things of that nature for these companies.
Got you. So this really is kind of a dynamic of a lot of companies are now just kind of getting their feet wet in these countries. What countries are we seeing that's going to be the major market? Is it going to be the Africa? Is it going to be the BRIC countries, kind of the Brazil, Russia, China, India, South Africa, or you know, all of Africa? What are we seeing, Mike?
Sure. I mean, we've seen it across Africa. We've seen it again in Europe. We've seen it in Southeast Asia. I think all of the above. Wherever there is a particular market where we can bring a capability to, I think you're going to see the potential for growth. We're also looking, you know, down under. We're seeing on the Australian continent.
Okay.
We are seeing things even in South America. So again, this is across the industry. You're really, really beginning to see more companies focusing on those international markets.
Well, you know, I know you had some of the companies had already done, I mean, BAEs and other things like that. Some of the companies who were already, they weren't necessarily American companies, but they came from overseas and then opened up an American subsidiary and began doing that. And so it sounds as if some American companies are going to start doing the same thing into these international markets.
More so, yes. And we do have, you know, there obviously are established U.S. defense contractors that have been doing work overseas for a number of years. And actually, if you do take a look at those companies, you'll see that actually their revenue and balance sheets have actually been pretty consistent, even with the drawdown in the U.S. Now, there are certain business areas within those organizations that probably have taken hits from a revenue perspective. But overall, those organizations, those companies, tend to still be financially vibrant. So
right.
It is because of their diversified portfolio, their ability to have already, you know, have a base of operations overseas really makes it a more stable organization.
You know, when we look at that piece right there and we look at kind of the stability of companies and we look at maybe these growing markets, are these industries in terms of the growing markets, are countries open to kind of say, hey, listen, we want to bring some U.S. firms and U.S. capabilities? Are we seeing that they're asking for that capabilities? And also, too, should small and medium-sized businesses also begin looking at this? People who may have been government contractors who were small and medium-sized, should they start looking their eyes globally a little bit more?
Sure. To answer the first part of your question there, yes, we are seeing countries from around the world expressing interest in, say, American capability, again, cybersecurity, some of our systems integration, even our products as well, whether that be technology products out of the Silicon Valley or products that are being made here within the defense industry. Certainly there is a demand for our services and products overseas. Your second question there, Derek?
The second one was Mike, should small and medium-sized businesses begin kind of taking that look at, you know, rather than just staying focused in on federal or government, should they start looking globally?
Yes, I believe they have, either as, you know, their own entity or even in a subcontractor type of capacity, as they have done with some of the larger companies here within the industry. Absolutely. I think this is a complete industrial focus.
Okay.
I think many companies here, and we have to. I mean, as I mentioned, you need to follow the money. You need to really, market your capabilities for your own, you know, companies to grow year over year. And obviously, as public companies, make sure that you show the stockholders that you are actually growing year over year. So this is really one of the better avenues to pursue. For growth and projecting growth for the next couple of years.
Without question. We're talking to Mike Bruni. He is a talent acquisition professional, a senior recruiter, someone who knows the industry in terms of looking for the right people to match the right positions within the right organization. He is the one who's out there talking to people and then helping people and giving them advice. And he's been very, very credible in giving advice to people who have been looking at jobs about how do you make sure you position yourself the right way. He already mentioned one thing right now by staying on top of your skills, but we're going to tap into Mike's advice in a few more minutes as we come back for this next segment on Fed Access. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we are talking to Mike Bruni. He is a talent acquisition professional. He is a senior recruiter, someone who knows the hiring market, someone who knows the trends and has the insight on the market and sees where companies are going in terms of hiring. He's talking to us today about what should people know. Okay, about it, whether it be advice or whether it be about these trends. We've already talked about a couple of things. Healthcare is evolving. The international market is evolving. Defense may stay kind of, you know, stable and stagnant, but it's not necessarily a growth industry right now. So people need to be aware about this when they're looking at their career and where they're going to go. Mike, when we were talking about these evolving markets, and it seems as if technology, no matter what sector, defense, healthcare, international, is probably one of your biggest players no matter where you go. Is that right?
That is correct. That is correct.
With all of that, are we looking at kind of the people across the board? Is software developers, engineers, is cyber, is it all of them? Or is there any particular one that you kind of say, this is the hot thing no matter where you go? Healthcare, international, wherever the case is, if you have these skill sets, you're going to be employed.
Yes. And I will tell you, Derek, and you mentioned engineering, you mentioned software development, particularly here in our local market in the Washington, D.C. metro area, certainly an in-demand skill set across IT, of course, but particularly in your engineering and your development areas. There's just the demand is outweighing the supply. So certainly there is a shortage of U.S.-based engineering talent. And we're seeing it. I mean, walk into any room of HR and recruiting professionals, and when you ask, what is your greatest need, everyone will come back and say, hey, I need Java developers. Mm. That's been the case for years. I think in all of my 18 years in this industry, I don't think I've ever experienced where we had enough of that type of expertise to satisfy the demand in the marketplace.
Mm. Wow.
Certainly with the growth of healthcare, the growth of international markets, as we have been talking about, certainly that is going to be a cornerstone of talent that's going to be needed. Again, with the creation of new systems, with the integration of systems, all of the new technologies that ultimately will roll out as we continue to grow these new markets, you're going to see that demand even rise more.
You know, Mike, you just touched on a point. If a person was kind of maybe transitioning themselves and may say, I'm going to go and get some new education, maybe a young person right now is in school, if they came out with that Java background, a Java developing background within the next maybe 2-3 years, from what I'm hearing, you're saying that there could be some great job opportunities out there because there's a lack of these developers out there.
That is correct. The applications development field, certainly robust. Certainly hot. I think if you walked on any college campus today, particularly here in the D.C. metro area and across the country, I think you will see that employers continue to really recruit heavily from the senior ranks of the universities for this type of talent. It's one of the most sought after. And I can tell you from personal experience, any university that I go to, they tend to be sort of the cream of the crop candidates. We're always looking for the best technology. And this goes across the defense industry. Keep in mind, when we approach the universities and the collegiate level, we're competing with everyone else. We're competing with the Silicon Valley. We're competing with Wall Street. We're competing with everyone out there. So certainly this expertise is certainly in very high demand. If you look at some markets here across the country, you'll see a high percentage of their software development talent is actually brought in from international markets.
Right.
So the U.S. has some ways to go to really try to bring the number of folks with that type of expertise up to that level.
Wow. With that, Mike, a lot of people who will say, hey, listen, I'm an accountant. I'm a person who has a business background. I'm a business developer. Those people who aren't necessarily the high-end technical people but may have some strong business skills or some strong kind of financial skills, are there any positions that will consistently be on hire, or are those going to be kind of fewer and fewer positions?
Well, I think there will always be a need, if you will, for support-type functions.
Okay.
And what do I mean by support-type functions? We're talking about sales and business development. We're talking about HR. We're talking about the financial field. There's always going to be a need for certain professionals with certain niche skills in those areas. I can't tell you how many times Derek, over the years, I was told that technology is going to wipe out my livelihood of recruiting,
right.
And it's actually done the opposite,
right.
Where there's always that soft skill, that soft approach, as opposed to the hard skill, okay? Certainly, folks with Java developing types of skill set are certainly in high demand. What is also in high demand is the soft skills. You know, we look at, that figure of 80-20, 80% soft skill to 20% hard skill is what, employers tend to look for in an interview. And that's true. We need the interpersonal skills. We need, in this services-based economy, we need the folks who are very customer-driven, customer-oriented, and have the ability to obviously manage programs and deliver and be that service delivery type of person. So certainly, all of those support types of areas and management, budgeting, things of that nature, there'll always be a need, and there'll probably be a high demand for most of those folks on a continuous basis.
Yeah, as we look at this evolving market, Mike, and we talk about the soft skills and we talk about the dynamics. You know, from a professional standpoint of a recruiter, what do you see is probably the thing that and people, we talk about this all the time, kind of the black hole, where people see these job announcements out there. They'll see a company has thousands of job announcements out there, right? And they'll kind of say, I put in for all these different jobs and everything else, but I'm not hearing anything back. Is it more of the problem that the companies are overwhelmed? Is it more of the problem that the person is not, utilizing the right strategy? Where do you see the disconnect at?
Absolutely. I think there's a couple different areas, and I want to focus on one as it relates to the person who's actually seeking the opportunity. From what I continue to keep seeing, I think a lot of folks are stuck in a job-seeking type of function that's probably outdated by 10 years. I think we tend to market ourselves through our complete experience. And if you've been in the workplace 10 to 20 years, you tend to want to try to market all of your experience. And that worked very well years ago. Today, the more specific you are, the more targeted you are, the more success you tend to have. And what I mean by that is you really have to start off really looking at what it is that you want to do and how you are going to market those skill sets. You also have to take a look and say, are my skills in demand for the marketplace that I'm in? And this is where I think a lot of people miss that step. And I think what tends to happen, people sort of fly by the seat of their pants or shoot from the hip, and they really don't really do that internal self-assessment. Because in order to market yourself today, you really, really have to have a very good understanding of what it is that you want to do. When you tell a potential employer that you'll do anything, that's probably the wrong answer to that question. You really need to have the confidence in your own abilities, but also you have to do the educational piece of that and figure out where does your skill set and expertise fit into this marketplace. I think we're not seeing enough of that. I think if we did, it's the way that people can get through the volume and really reach the right people. And really, the way to find that opportunity, not just an opportunity.
We're talking to Mike Bruni. He is a talent acquisition professional. He is a senior recruiter working for one of the major companies in the area. He knows about this market, and he's given some valuable advice to job seekers about what's going on. We've already touched upon where the market is changing into, healthcare, international, and other areas. A lot of technical skills, but also the support skills are still in need. But now we're going to go into talking about some key advice about what job seekers need to hear and understand about how to penetrate these companies, how to really get themselves noticed, how to become the best and most competitive person in order to make sure that they get the job that they're looking for. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been having a real, real good conversation about what's going on with the hiring right now. What's going on with the job market? What are the trends and what are the transitions? And then also, what are some key advice? I know a lot of people are still frustrated. We hear that unemployment is coming down, but a lot of people are still frustrated with their job search. A lot of people still feel like, either I'm underemployed. I may be employed, but I'm underemployed, meaning I'm not in the position I want to be in. they're having frustration. If they are employed, they may be looking for another position, but they're still not getting the hits they want to in order to transition to a job that they want to. Or some people are just unemployed and they're still having a hard time finding the job they want, finding a job that's equal to what they need in terms of, you know, a lifestyle and everything else. So we're talking about all these issues today. We're talking to Mike Bruni. He is a talent acquisition professional. He is a senior recruiter who's been working for a number of different organizations, works for a senior, one of the senior defense companies in the area right now. But he knows the whole game and he knows what people have been through. But he also knows about, hey, listen, this is what companies are looking for. This is how you make yourself more competitive. This is how you talk to recruiters the right way. This is how you interview the right way. This is how your resume should look. We're talking about all these things today on Fed Access. Mike, you know, you just mentioned a couple of things about people not being so all over the place and always, and I hear this all, hey, what, you know, what do you want to do? Well, I'll do anything. You know, I mean, where do you want to work? Well, I'll work anywhere. You know, I mean, all these kind of vague and generic answers and, or, you know, a resume that has a little bit of everything on it is not targeted enough. What if, for a person you're mentioning about kind of targeting and saying, listen, get more specific and really address what you can bring to the table. How does a person show maybe 20 years or 10 years of all kind of stuff on their resume and target the right way that's going to get your attention?
Absolutely. It's actually the emphasis of certain skills and experience and the de-emphasizing of other skills. Okay. And I get that question a lot. You know, I've been in the, you know, I'll have someone say to me, I've been in the market 25 years. I can't consolidate my experience into, say, a one- or two-page resume. Really comes down to emphasizing the skill sets, really the skill sets that are in the most high demand, the skill sets that are really going to showcase your expertise to make you more attractive to the eye of an employer. That's what you're looking for. Today, recruiters are just inundated with resumes, with inquiries, with information. Technology has done a lot of great things. What it has done has created information overload. So we are inundated with applicants, with qualified individuals. And in a lot of cases, the majority of applicants and candidates that we're getting are not really meeting our qualifications, at least on paper. And that's the key.
Okay.
So the ability to showcase your skills very quickly really makes the difference between getting contacted by a potential employer and, again, continuing on in that black hole.
You know, Mike, when you talk about that and people kind of hear this, you know, specifying, are you suggesting that a person should really kind of take a look at the job announcement, really kind of assess that job announcement, and then really kind of take a look at their resume and say, listen, what do I need? What do I have that matches what they're asking for, and then begin telling my resume that way so I'm not wasting a recruiter's time and having a little bit of everything on here? Is that more of the kind of that the practice that somebody needs to go into?
Absolutely. I think when a potential job seeker is looking at a particular opportunity, that's the exact advice that one should give. On the other side of that, I think the job seeker also has to understand that the market they're in.
Okay.
Marketing a skill set to a market that doesn't really warrant, a lot of consideration is probably not. It's probably not going to do you any good. Another mistake I think that folks in career transition tend to make is they tend to spread themselves so thin. They'll apply and send their resume to 50 different organizations. Really, what they need to do is they need to do that research. And educate themselves on which organizations are going to really be interested in their expertise, in their skill sets. And they need really to focus on those organizations. Because with that, again, it will, you know, it's a better probably cultural fit, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's more in line with their experience. And I think the time to land an opportunity really gets a little shorter as long as you have a more organized, educated search. And I think that's what's lacking in a lot of the, particularly in a lot of the interaction that I have, and I have quite a bit of interaction with the job-seeking community. I think we're not seeing folks really tighten up their search.
Right. Mike, when people see a whole bunch of job announcements out from an organization, whether it be a small or big one, How can a person tell if that job announcement is one that's more about kind of a resume depository, maybe one that's kind of seeking people for maybe future contracts, maybe one that's just kind of out here to see if we're going to just get anybody, or one that's really a hot hiring, we need to hire somebody ASAP?
You know, it's a great question, and I get that one a lot, Derek, and I will tell you it's not always easily stated there.
Okay.
Generally, job descriptions in general are poorly written. They are very boilerplate.
Mm-hmm.
They really do not appeal to the seeker for the most part. I think this is something that's been talked about by a number of leaders and, you know, thought leaders in the recruiting industry and the HR industry. And, of course, based on feedback that we get from applicants, they're just not written to really draw someone into applying based on interest. So they're not the most attractive documents. But to look at a job description and take from it that it is contingent upon funding or an award, some of the times it is stated in there, but most times it is not. So it's really a luck of the draw. The best way to actually approach this, again, is to really figure out what organizations may offer the types of opportunities that you're interested in. And then that's where networking comes in. I mean, nothing is going to beat networking. 80% roughly of folks hired in this country tend to find their opportunities through someone else or were referred for that opportunity.
Right.
So understanding the organization, understanding your skill set, and then having a conduit to that, finding someone who actually can give you that information and hopefully connect you with the decision maker is really the key. And that, again, is what's probably going to get you the results in a shorter period of time than spreading your resume across the industry.
How important are success stories, Mike? And when you look at a resume, especially when you're seeing a lot of the people are using the kind of the keywords about skills, so then you have a whole bunch of people who are now qualified, so to say. How important do those success stories now then become a major factor for you? Or what are some of the things that differentiate a person, especially in a grouping of so-called qualified people?
Sure, absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, everyone, if you are invited in, as a general rule, if a candidate seeking an opportunity is invited in to interview,
mm-hmm.
we have established, for the most part, that you meet the qualifications, okay? So whether there is three applicants being invited in for an interview or 10, you are all qualified. From there, it comes down to chemistry. It goes back to that 80-20 rule that we talked about, 80% of the soft skill, 20% of the hard skill. A question I always ask my audiences when I speak is, does the most qualified person always get offered the job? The answer to that question is no. The most likable and the best fit are the folks that actually are offered the position. How do you try to make yourself the best fit? Again, the more research that you do, the more that you know about the culture within that organization, people that you've talked to, using multiple resources from networking to the internet to social media to really identify that organization is going to help make you the best fit for that organization.
You know, Mike, I wish we always had more time because you always give this a wealth of advice that people need to hear. And we're going to have to always have you back because there's so many different things we could cover to try to get a job to get prepared. I think a lot of people, technology has been a great tool, but sometimes I think people become lazy with it. And so they're not doing what they should do in order to target themselves, in order to write their resumes the right way. They just think they can just drop a resume into the black hole and then all of a sudden the job is going to appear. They don't have to do the networking. They don't have to use the personal skills as much as they need to. All these things are very, very valuable. Thanks, Mike, for coming on Fed Access and breaking this down for us. We're going to have you back.
Thank you, Derek. It was my pleasure.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.